Hello and welcome to Bone Up, the podcast all about bones, how we make them, why we break them, and if we fully understand them. I'm David Armstrong.
Hi, and I'm Richie Abel. And over this series, we're going to be exploring osteoporosis, bones, what we know, and what we're yet to discover. And we hope you will join us on the journey.
So for anyone keen to learn more about our infrastructure of calcified collagen, this is Bone Up. Hello and welcome back to Bone Up. We've made it back from Marseille, from the European meeting in one piece, and we hope you have enjoyed listening to our take on what went on at the CTS conference. Do you feel invigorated, Richie? Relaxed? Inspired?
I do. I always feel inspired after coming back from a conference. It's hard sometimes in science. You have to, you know, write grants and write papers that get rejected a lot, and you have to keep trying. And whenever I go to a conference, I always get a big boost, and I think, come on, keep going. It's really important. How did you find the conference?
Yeah, I thought it was great. Again, it's inspiring. It's nice to meet people around the world. It's nice to hear science. It's nice for me to be able to go back to patients and say, you know, I've been, you know, the questions that patients ask me, saying, well, I've actually been speaking to some of the world's leading researchers who have been actually trying to answer the specific questions you ask me. And yeah, it's nice to get away for a few days. Unfortunately, the work builds up, you know, there's no one does my work while I'm away. But yeah, it's good. It gives you a bit of a refresh.
Today, we're going to have a guest speaking to us about the importance of exercise in bone health. And I was just wondering, David, what kind of questions do your patients have for you about exercise and its role in their treatment, if you like, for osteoporosis?
Yeah, it's, I mean, people, we've mentioned this before, I would say for every one question you get about how bones work at some basic level or about drugs, you probably get about 10 questions about diet and exercise. Those are the things people are interested in. And I think some of that is because it's something that is very much patient-centered and they can go away and do themselves. And of course, sometimes research on exercise can be a little more difficult because it's not just as clean and dry as doing either basic research on cells or animals or research just using drugs. But I suppose one of the questions, rather than just the basic questions about exercise, because I think most people realize exercise now is good for them and good for their muscles and bones, is the combination of exercise with drugs. Because usually when people come to see me at the clinic, I don't get to see everyone with osteoporosis in the trust where I work. People who come to see me at the clinic usually have quite severe or unusual osteoporosis. Often now they've broken vertebrae, broken bones in their back. So they're in pain. They're often quite frightened about having further fractures. They know they're coming to see me about some new drugs. And they ask questions about should they exercise? What sort of exercise should they do? And then when I tell them they're about to start some new powerful drug, some people might assume that they don't need to exercise then because they're now getting, you know, getting a wonder drug, getting some really powerful treatment. Or they may worry that exercising may interfere with the function of the drug in the way you might have been told if you're taking an antibiotic, you shouldn't go to the gym or go running, you know, because you're on an antibiotic. So I shouldn't exercise if I'm injecting myself with an anabolic. And until fairly recently, we didn't have a lot of evidence to advise people on that connection between exercise and you know, the new medication and some of the older medication we give people. But as you know, then at last year's ECTS, we met a researcher who was just starting to do some really interesting work looking at what happens if you add mechanical loading, resistance training to treatment with drugs and indeed looking at different drugs to see the effect that has on the bone.
So listeners, if you're living with osteoporosis or you're living with somebody who's living with osteoporosis and you have questions about exercise and how exercise interacts with the medicines for osteoporosis, we've got a great interview for you today.
Yeah. We managed to get Friederike Schulte. We spoke to her briefly last year. She agreed then at some point to give us a bigger interview today. We managed to catch up with her when we were in Marseille and ask her all the questions I hope that my patients ask me and they'll be relevant to listeners.
We're delighted to have with us today Friederike Schulte from ZTH Zurich. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Welcome. If you're a big fan of the podcast, you may remember Friederike speaking to us briefly last year at the ECTS meeting, telling us about her research, and we were so excited. We asked her if she'd come back and speak to us for a proper episode, and here she is.
And listeners, today we're recording this from the ECTS conference. This is a face-to-face meeting, which is really nice. We don't often get to see our guests' faces and talk to them for so long. So thank you for joining us today.
Sure, I also appreciate that.
So we were really excited last year to hear about your research into how bone medicines and physical activity and loading might combine and how a combination of those might improve treatments for patients. And you've got a really amazing paper in preprint, which will hopefully come out in publication soon. So listeners, you're getting, you know, the first here today. We brought it to you first. Would you tell us about your really interesting project?
Yes, sure. We work in the preclinical field, and in our laboratory, we work with a mechanical loading model in mice. And we are interested in investigating how mechanical loading, that is to say, in translated physical exercise, then in humans, how this mechanical loading affects trabecular bone mass. Especially in the case of osteoporosis. So the mice that we use are over-victimized in order to let the bone loss occur. And there we, for mechanical loading, we see increases in the bone mass, in the bone volume fraction. And we were then lately very much interested in whether in the effects of several osteoporosis treatments, that is to say bisphosphonate treatment, being anti-catabolic or PTH treatment, an anabolic treatment or sclerostin antibodies. And we were then particularly interested in whether mechanical loading combined with one of those treatments would lead to even enhanced effects. That's what we were investigating.
Yeah. What a wonderful research question. How does physical activity affect the effect of a drug on osteoporotic bone?
Absolutely. And I think of all the sort of more basic science papers that I saw in the last year, I think yours is the one that I've ended up discussing most with patients, because it comes up most relevantly where patients say to me, I've been doing a bit of resistance training exercise for my bones, and now you want to give me a drug. Is the resistance training better than the drug? Will the drug interfere with the exercise? Do I get benefits together? And obviously you could design a trial involving thousands of human beings taking different drugs following for many years, but you can do this in mice, and in mice that are sort of designed to have osteoporosis, and you can get the results obviously more quickly and give us a clue about humans. So I suppose the big question is then, what did you find? The exercise, the loading, mechanical loading, it was good for bones, and how did that compare with the different drugs as well?
Yeah, sure. The mechanical loading, so the first parameter that we looked at was the trabecular bone volume fraction. And in all treatments, considering the mechanical loading, also a mono treatment, we found after 4 weeks of mechanical loading, this is a cyclic mechanical loading protocol, 3 times a week, 3,000 cycles at 10 hertz and 8 newton. And we found after 4 weeks of mechanical loading, an increase in trabecular bone volume fraction of about 20%.
Okay, and the trabecular bone volume is sort of thickness, strength of bone, essentially? For the listeners, it's bone strength.
Yes,
and you were sort of sending the mice to the gym three times a day?
Yes, and it supports the core, the strength of the whole bone of the vertebra. Mm-hmm. And it has the trabecular network itself. With the single trabecula, it adapts very responsively to mechanical loads. That's what we know from research, because individual trabeculae have the freedom to move and adapt themselves in order to align best with the incoming loading demands.
Yeah. The stress you're putting on them,
That's why the trabecular compartment is like more responsive to the mechanical demands, and this is why we also expected more results or more changes in this compartment.
You sent the mice to the gym 4 weeks later. Their vertebra, the trabecular bone, was stronger, was thicker, was better. So that's good.
Yeah.
What happened then when you gave them the different types of drugs? And our listeners will know there's bisphosphonates, which generally reduce bone turnover, denosumab, which reduces bone turnover, and then there's the other type of drugs which promotes bone building, like teriparatide and anti-sclerostin antibody. So what did you see in those different groups?
Yes, regarding the bone volume fraction, we kind of also designed the study like that we would see similar extents in the bone volume fraction. So what we can say is that all three drugs that we investigated ended with about 20% increase in this trabecular bone volume fraction, and that we used as a baseline. Mm-hmm. Of course, if you then look closer into trabecular thickness, the other morphometric parameters, or also bone formation rates and bone resorption rates, then you see differences between the treatments. And then this fact that you mentioned, that anti-catabolic bisphosphonates would reduce resorption rates, this can then be seen in the remodeling rates, in the mm-hmm. bone formation and resorption rates.
So you're seeing then that exercise and the medicines, they change, increase bone volume by changing the activity of the cells.
Yes.
So you can see the mechanism by which exercise and medicines affect bone strength.
Yes. Yep.
And when you combined the exercise with the bone medicines, what did you find? Did you get bigger, better bone growth?
Shortly speaking, yes, we did. And there were differences in the effects of the combination treatments. If we start with bisphosphonates, there was a slight increase that the mechanical loading brought in addition to the bisphosphonate treatment. So I would say it's still recommendable, although slightly. It's a slight decrease that you can achieve with the mechanical loading on top of it. Mm-hmm. And then with the anabolic treatments, it was for the PTH, you received a synergistic effect in the bone volume fraction. We might come to this later, because in other parameters it's not additive. But in the bone volume fraction, you see a synergistic effect in the combination of PTH and mechanical loading. And in the sclerostin antibody group, we saw the even stronger synergistic effect of sclerostin antibody therapy plus mechanical loading.
So how much more does the bone volume increase, the trabecular bone volume, when you combine exercise with a medicine?
Yeah, if we stick to the numbers, 20% increase by mono treatments, mechanical loading, and then 20% increase by sclerostin antibody treatment alone. And then in the combination group, we had more than 50% increase in the combined group.
That is an astonishing finding. So when you combine the medicines and the exercise together, you basically more than double the increase in bone volume fraction. And I guess, you know, if we're thinking about people and patients, if you're getting DEXA scans measuring your bone mineral density, mm-hmm. if you greatly increase the amount of trabecular bone in your hip or your lumbar vertebrae, then you're going to get a much better T-score, and that tells you you're going to get a lower risk of fracture.
And so if I've got this right, then giving anabolic, giving bone building agents, seems to work better with resistance training, mechanical loading, than giving anti-resorptive, anti-catabolic, giving bisphosphonate. So what's your thinking behind that? Why do anabolic agents work better with exercise than the bisphosphonates?
Bisphosphonates themselves also have advantages from what we saw, because bisphosphonates were the only treatment, pharmaceutical treatment, that did not reduce the trabecular number from those morphometric parameters okay. that we investigated, meaning that the trabecular network itself was like maintained, while in all other treatments, including the physical loading treatment, we saw a decrease in trabecular number, mm-hmm. meaning that trabeculae that are lost during osteoporotic bone loss are lost. That's a fact okay, that also yeah. highlights that it's better to start early yeah, with the treatments. Yeah. yeah. But yeah. with bisphosphonates, there we saw this was the advantage that we saw with bisphosphonates. Apart from that, I think that increasing the bone formation is the most straightforward way to increase what we want to have, an increase mm-hmm. in bone mass. Yeah. Mm.
So thinking about the methodology of the study then, you're using mice in this study, and it makes logical sense that we can extrapolate the findings to humans, but it might be worth digging down a little bit into the detail. How old were the mice, and what kind of human stage of life do they represent?
Yeah, mice were 15 weeks old when they were overectomized. That corresponds to adult patients, but they were rather young at age, so they would correspond to rather... I'm now guessing 40, 50 ages, years of age. That's the range. So rather in a younger age. That is a limitation of the study. To have it in older mice mm-hmm. would have been closer to what we have usually in the clinical everyday life. Yeah.
So you've got 15-week-old mice then, equivalent to an adult human around about 50 years old, and you remove the ovaries, and that creates postmenopausal osteoporosis, if you like. So, I mean, that's a good model, right? You've got a postmenopausal mouse, in effect, which you can then test the effect of exercise and the medicines on.
Yes, that's right, because we wanted to reflect as much as possible the situation that we have in patients.
And how closely does the mechanical loading of your mice and the mouse vertebra reflect what a human being might do? So I was joking and saying you send the mice to the gym, but if my patient actually goes to the gym and does some weight training, resistance training, does Pilates, how can you be sure that the mechanical loading you're giving the mice relates to a human who's standing upright for a start?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And there we also need clinical studies. Mm-hmm. I'm aware of one study in that German researchers just published last year in Erlangen, where they found exercise, different kinds of exercises, decreased fracture risk. Mm-hmm. And these are the kind of studies that we need and also yeah. want to rely on. From the more methodological perspective, what we have or what we apply in the preclinical model are cyclic high loads compared mm-hmm. to everyday walking or yeah. so. And we are inspired from tennis players where these increased bone mass and bone strength yeah. is observed. Yeah. And if you consider what the impacts that are on the bone of tennis players, for example, yeah. then these are short, very high impacts, and they are repeated. And repeated. That's what we, and that's also the kind of exercise that we have done in mind that would be necessary, like hopping or like walking in the hills. That's these cyclic
patients will often say to me, "Well, I walk a lot. Is that good?" And I will encourage people to walk and say, "Yeah, it's good for your muscles, good for your health. You know, it's certainly not bad for your bones, but probably the evidence is that you need."
A bit more
shorter periods of high impact
exactly.
rather than just long
yes.
standing periods of yeah. lesser impact. Yeah.
That's definitely also a question that is of interest for me as a basic researcher, mm-hmm. and that's why I also like these meetings where we have the interaction also between clinical researchers and us. And I especially last year, I also asked this question. And the response that I got was that physical exercise, really strength training, using the muscles and going to the gym is actually the method to see also the increases in bone mass. So there's sports, yeah.
I suppose there's a message here. If you are a young clinical scientist listening to this podcast now and you want a good idea for a project, I think testing the effect of exercise in your patients who are receiving these different medicines would be really wonderful.
I always wonder, is there any evidence maybe to put it another way around, do you just build bone uniformly, or is there any evidence that you will build bone in particular parts of the body where the density is low, or where the trabeculae are thin? Is there any evidence that the body particularly heals the parts that are weak?
Yeah, that's also a very good question that I love to elaborate on, because the methodology that we used, in vivo microcomputer tomography, allowed time-lapse imaging, and thus also allowed to visualize the sites of formation and sites of resorption within the bone. And with micro finite element analysis, we get the mechanical environment and the load distribution within this trabecular compartment, and we compared exactly the sites of high strains and highly strained trabeculae, whether those would result in formed and a thickening of those trabeculae. And visually we saw indeed such a correlation between the high strains and subsequent bone formation, and on the other side low strains in a lowly loaded area or trabecular. And that particular trabecular was then oftentimes resorbed. So there seems really on the tissue level where the sites act, there seems to be this relationship.
So if you have a weak piece of tissue and you take your drug and you mechanically load, it's almost as if the drug then will improve that piece of tissue which is weak that you're mechanically loading. It's like a signal almost.
Yeah,
come here and build the bone here because this is the bit that's weak.
We also think it could be like a map indicating.
Where's weak and where's
exactly
strong.
Yeah.
It's like getting your builder in and saying, I want you to put bricks into that piece of the wall there because that piece is weak.
That's really
exciting.
While I have to say that the drugs themselves do that as well to certain extent. So the drugs as well, all of them follow this principle, which is actually exciting, I think, for the knowing that no bone will be built in sites that are actually not needed, or the other way around.
Because that's something patients do want to know.
Yeah.
Because they see a DEXA scan and I say, well, it's particularly weak here, or particularly low there, it's not bad here. They'll say, well, will the drug know that? Does my body know that? And I think I can reassure them and say, yes, if you do this exercise, if you take the drug, you will actually increase bone density and bone strength in the bits of the body that you need.
Yes.
And people are excited when they hear that.
Yeah. And what we see also, what my colleague Julia Grietzbach investigated, was that whether the mechanoregulation that we have, would that be more tightly, would the bone be more tightly regulated by mechanical stimuli or less tightly regulated? And there we have a difference between the anabolic and the anti-catabolic drugs, because so what we know is that about 80% of the bone mass is regulated by or controlled by the mechanics, and then 20% are due to calcium
hormones and nutrition and other things.
Exactly.
And sorry, does that just refer to the vertebrae, or the hips are all parts of the body?
So we only have knowledge about the vertebrae.
Only about the vertebrae. That's okay. I interrupted. Go ahead.
No, it's important. This portion of untargeted remodeling is about 20%. But what we saw that this decreases with the anabolic drugs, especially compared in addition to physical treatment, that means a larger portion of the bone is then controlled by mechanical stimuli in response of or to mechanical loading. And in bisphosphonates, this is rather increased, this amount of untargeted remodeling. This is what we see. We have the impression that because osteoclast activity is reduced, we have the impression then that osteoblastic activity is then more free to, osteoblasts are more free to work.
To work, yeah.
So it sounds like there's potentially several overlapping mechanisms here for the potentiation of the effect of the drugs by exercise. I suppose what you're saying here is that the drugs are making the bone more receptive to exercise whilst also increasing the amount of bone themselves.
I don't know if I or we could answer this with our data. That's it's a theory. It could well be, but we don't know yet.
Well, that's an honest answer from a scientist, isn't it? You don't want to extrapolate. Yeah. That's good, but I think that's it's almost what we're aiming for, isn't it? It would be lovely to show that eventually.
So what's next then? If you could wave your magic wand and have all the money and resources, maybe from the IFMRS. What study would you like to do next?
Very good question. So we are in the end of bringing this all together. We are missing denosumab in our overview. Of course, that's a drug that I would be particularly interested in. There are so many questions because we have this the sclerostin bodies antibodies themselves because they express now so much potential. I would like to further investigate that. What is the mechanism behind why do we have this synergy? So we want to know the the biological mechanisms behind. So this is triggering.
Yeah, that's really good.
So, bringing the project to a finish, the paper's in preprint. Listeners, it's freely available online if you want to go and read it on BioRocks. We'll put a link in the podcast episode for you to follow. Hopefully soon it'll be published as well. What's next now you're finishing this project?
Yeah, a lot of ideas then. So we are in our lab also trying to understand these mechanisms, and we are using also next to the animal work also in silico work where we try to reproduce the results that we saw in silico, and because there we have access in silico also to like the proteins, sclerostin itself, we have we can model those effects, and then we can study different hypotheses that we have. For example, why do we have this synergism? Mm-hmm. In order to gain a better understanding of what's really happening in the bone.
And in the wider world, what's next for you? I did a bit of a Google stalk on you. I understand you've got a spin out about falls prevention. That sounds really interesting.
That's right. That's another baby of mine. So, yes, sure. I think what we all as a community want is to reduce fractures in the elderly population. And this is during my time in research when I did my PhD. So I knew there were a lot of fall prevention approaches around, and the principle is simple: if no fall occurs, then probably also no fracture occurs. We know that 90% of the fractures in the elderly population occur due to a severe fall, and when I was in research, there were all possibilities, and we had access to all newest information and international falls research. And we thought there is a lot of potential for falls prevention. But then when really speaking to the elderly population, to elderly people, my grandfather, for example, or my neighbor, and then we noticed that there is not that knowledge that we think that is available in research really in the population, but there is a huge need for that. People are asking, what could I do, because I fear I would fracture, and many of those are also not diagnosed with those that are at risk of fracture. So but still they know it's a situation that could occur. And because of this need that we felt, we initiated this, it's called Sturzzentrum, it's Swiss Falls Center, in order to bring this knowledge that is available in research also on a more direct way to the people. Mm-hmm. And we did that via giving expert lectures in senior resident homes and senior organizations.
And so do you go around and educate in senior homes? Do you show people exercises? Is it a hands-on thing,
no,
or is it more educational advice? How does it work?
It works on just by knowledge transfer.
Knowledge, yeah.
Highlighting the kind of exercise that mm-hmm. is in fall research important. Those are the three kinds of exercise. Strength training, of course, yeah. which also helps to not fracture, of course. And balance training in order to keep balance.
Yeah.
And then in recent years, also the mental brain training
yeah.
has been highlighted, or motor cognitive training,
mm-hmm.
because reaction is also one important
yeah.
factor.
Yes, steady, steady, straight and strong, as they say.
Your research is fascinating, Friederike, how you can go from really fundamental science all the way through to clinical translational science. You know, it's amazing. That's such a wonderful breadth and also depth of research. I'm really impressed. Thank you for coming to talk to us today.
Thank you as well for the interview. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, it's been really nice to talk to you. Thank you.
And I'm sure we're going to have you back in the future again.
Absolutely. And keep sending your mice to the gym.
I will.
David, I really enjoyed that interview. Fascinating. What are your takeaways?
Yeah, isn't it always so good to hear what is very, very fundamental science research, but yet which has such a direct application to what we do in the clinic? You know, there's such a short pathway between Friederike's laboratory and my clinic room, which always excites me. I think obviously one takeaway is that exercise is good. Exercise, you know, mechanical loading of the mice she was looking at, it's beneficial to their bones. We can't hear that enough. I think the idea that the bones respond differently to different types of treatment, we sort of knew that, but it's interesting to hear how if you add exercise to those different types of treatment, then the bones do respond slightly differently. You could say, I suppose, the one of the bigger take-home messages is that the anabolic, the bone-building medication, seems to work particularly well with exercise. Exercise stimulates bone building, reduces bone loss, and it seems that if you add an extra stimulant to bone building, romosozumab, teriparatide, to that, then you get not just an additive effect, not just the 20% from the exercise, 20% from the medication, but Friederike was saying 50%, so you get like a synergistic effect. So I think that's really interesting. She did point out, of course, these things are complex, so the effects of bisphosphonates are also positive on the bone, but work differently. And I think it was nice to hear her being honest when you ask some questions and we were maybe overstepping, saying, well, does this mean X and Y and Z? And she said, well, I just don't have the data for that yet. And that's always nice to hear mm-hmm. someone, they've still got their science head on. She's just as excited about all this as we are, but yet she's just taking things one step at a time, because we never want to give people advice that's not backed up by science and backed up by evidence. I really enjoyed talking to her, and I have more confidence to recommend exercise to patients, and particularly when they're starting some of these new drugs. And what about you?
I thought the research project is amazing. The thing that I most liked about it was that fundamentally it was a really interesting question. How does exercise affect bone when people are taking a bone medicine? Mm-hmm. It's really interesting and important question. I was completely impressed by the delivery of the research. I mean, that is a very difficult project. Mm-hmm. Looking after mice, loading their bones in vivo while the mice are alive, repeatedly CT scanning the mice over time to try and understand what's going on in the bone. I know that analyzing CT scans is hard. It takes a lot of time. I mean, there must have been so much time dedicated in that project to reconstructing the CT scans, studying the changes in shape in bone over time. On top of that, Frederico was also looking at the cells and looking at how the osteoblastic and osteoclastic activity was changing over time. So it was possible to work out what the mechanism linking the exercise or the medicine was to the ultimate outcomes in bone. The outcome measures for the project, looking at trabecular bone volume fraction, was a really important one. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the amount of trabecular bone is really important in humans. You know, when we collect a DEXA scan, that's really what we're looking at. Yeah. And we're trying to understand how much bone there is so we can understand whether somebody needs a treatment. I thought Frederica explains everything really well. Brilliantly conceived project, amazingly well delivered, and then well explained. And it's a sort of research that I really love. And ever since we spoke to Frederica at ECTS 2023, I've really wanted to get her back on the show and interview her again to find out more about this. And I suppose the last thing I would say is kind of reiterating what you were talking about earlier on. Listeners, this is just such a wonderful example of how basic science, right, can tell us something about us, you, and your lives, and how exercise is going to benefit you. It's just amazing.
I'm really looking forward to seeing all this finished, of her work finished. And I think in particular that concept that the body almost knows which parts of its skeleton are weakest, and that's the part of the skeleton that gets particular attention. That's the part of the skeleton that builds bone most when you combine exercise with anabolic agents. That's amazing, and I'm really excited to see that working its way out as all her research is finished.
Yeah, it's fascinating, and it kind of all makes sense, really, but we've got to do this research to demonstrate the effects so that somebody like yourself can really give good recommendations to patients and have confidence in those recommendations and be able to explain the scientific evidence base that supports those recommendations.
Absolutely.
Well, we better leave it there. Thank you for joining us again, listeners. We hope you're having a good day.
Bye now.